I'm Fraser Kane. You're listening to the audio edition of Universe Today. Thanks to new instruments and telescopes, astronomers are filling in all the pieces that help explain how planets form out of extended disks of gas and dust around newborn stars. This process seems to happen quickly, often just a few million years is all it takes to go from dust to planets. But astronomers have found one protoplanetary disk that refuses to grow up. It's 25 million years old and still hasn't made the transition to form planets. Lee Hartman is with the Harvard-Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics and the lead author on the paper announcing the find. Hi, Lee. Welcome to Universe Today.
Thanks.
So you found the oldest planetary disk. Can you give me a sense of how unusual this disk is that you found?
Well, this is about the oldest planetary or protoplanetary disk. The oldest ones that we found before were something like 10 million years old. So this is about two and a half times as old as anything that we'd found before. And
was that a big surprise to find something that old?
Yeah, because it seems like about half or more of all stars have some kind of extended dusty disk that is something that would make planets at an age of about a million years or so. And then by 10 million years, you're down to kind of like 10% of all stars, or maybe even less than that. So to find this thing at twice the age was really pretty remarkable. I mean, we thought that by 20 million years, it would really be down to zero, anything that still had dust around that was very much like a planetary disk.
And so what could keep the disk stable for so long?
Well, it's not really clear. I mean, the central system in this case is actually a close binary star. And so it's possible that instead of a single star like we have in the solar system, that there's actually kind of two almost equal mass stars that are orbiting around in a very close orbit. And although something about maybe the size of somewhere between Mercury's orbit and Venus's orbit, something like that size. And although it seems as though that could be kind of churning things up because each star has its own gravity, and as they move around, they could be churning up the disk and agitating the particles. What we think happens to make planets is that the dust, the little, basically you start off with something close to dust bunnies, and the dust kind of sticks electrostatically in small little lumps, and then it grows bigger and bigger, and it makes rocks, and then it makes things that are more like asteroids, and finally planets. And that, in the planet's forming stage, is the thing that really clears out all this dust. And so that process is thought to be kind of a very delicate process, and things kind of settle down over time scales of thousands to millions of years. And so it's possible that if you're churning it up just a little bit, keeping the particles suspended, that they don't really stick together that well and you don't go through the rest of the planetary process like most other stars do.
Now, how common would something like this be? This is the oldest one that's been found. Do you think there are others nearby, or is this a total fluke?
Well, it's hard to imagine that there's only one of these things in the galaxy, right, let alone the entire universe. But this must be a very rare occurrence as far as we can tell, because we can see large clusters of stars people have looked at that are 30 million years old, 50 million years old, 100 million years old, and they haven't found anything like this in several hundreds or even thousands of stars in total. So this thing probably, you know, it's probably like one in a thousand maybe or something like that. That's sort of what I would guess, but it's hard to know because we just haven't, we haven't looked carefully enough at these things. Until we haven't been able to really until very recently, because the Spitzer Space Telescope has just so much more sensitivity than anything we were ever able to do before. It's just made factors of hundreds and thousands in terms of our ability to detect very faint sources, as this thing is. And so we're just kind of taking the first baby steps to explore, you know, what's out there, even in our own neighborhood. So with the Spitzer telescope, they start looking at some of these other clusters. They're confirming that at ages of, you know, twice the age of this system, say, they're really, you know, it's less than one in a thousand that's like that. So it's really a fairly unique system, and we must have caught it in some very special circumstances.
Now, do you think that it could go on for millions and millions of years more? Is this sort of, is this still early age for it?
Well, this is something that we don't understand very well. And one of the reasons that study these kinds of systems is that we really need a lot of help in understanding the physics of this, the physics of how planets form out of basically dust bunnies to start with. And it's just such a complicated process, and there are all kinds of things that we don't quite understand that we really need to have a lot more surveys of these things. So my guess is that actually, I don't really know what's going to happen to the system. I don't think, my own opinion is it's probably not going to go on and coagulate into planets if it hasn't done it already, because the theories suggest that there's kind of a threshold that you have to meet. You have to have just enough stuff to make it happen, to really get over the hump of making larger bodies, which can then sweep up all the small dust and clear out the disk. And, you know, if you don't ever get to that threshold, you know, you might not ever make any planets. So my guess is that it may just kind of peter out, and some of the dust grains either get blown out or spiral in slowly into the star, and that's the end of it, but we don't really understand that.
Have planet-forming disks been seen around binary systems before?
Yes, if I can just qualify that and say that we're assuming that these disks make planets. It's right now we haven't really had a complete smoking gun to say that these dusty disks actually make planets. I think it's a very strong likelihood because, you know, we see all this distributed dust of very young stars, and then it's all gone, and we know that we have to coagulate the dust and get rid of the small stuff and put it into big things to make planets. So that's the assumption that we're making, but I just want to say that we actually haven't, you know, connected all the dots on that issue. But
right, so I guess have disks been seen around binary systems like this?
Yes, they have. And the issue is that basically you can't the dust in the disk. The disk isn't going to be at the same size orbit as the binary orbit, right? Because the other star will just swallow all the dust or evaporate it or blow it away. So, on the other hand, if you have a very wide binary, if you have something where the other star is very far away, you can have a disk well inside of that binary, and it doesn't know that there's another star orbiting around it. Just like, you know, we orbit around the sun, and Jupiter is out there at several AU, but, you know, that only makes small perturbations on the orbit of the Earth. Similarly, you could have a system in which, like this thing that we're talking about now, where the two stars are relatively close together and the disk is well outside of the binary, and so to that disk, it almost looks like there's just a single star. It's not quite like that because the two stars are orbiting around, so the gravity is churning it up a little bit. But it's not that far away from just having a single object. So as long as the disk is either a lot bigger than the binary or a lot smaller than the binary, you know, you're okay. Now, if the disk is a lot bigger than the binary, though, it can be so tenuous and so spread out that it never really coagulates effectively into planets. But that's something that's what we would kind of predict, but that's not something that we're able to demonstrate observationally yet and follow that.
Now, do you have some follow-on observations planned for this?
What I think we would like to try and do is to get longer wavelength observations to see where the disk ends, because in this set of observations, we're basically saying that there is a disk, but we don't know how big it is. So it The question is there anything outside of this system that could be perturbing the disk as well? I mean, there might be a farther, it might even be a triple system for all we know, with a very, very much wider companion that was low mass that we haven't seen, and that could really be churning it up and preventing the disk from making planets or coagulating at least. And then the other thing that we're trying to do is we're trying to identify other systems like this, which are also, you know, 20 million years old, 30 million years old, if we can find any more of these things, just to see how common they are and whether they're all binaries or what's special about them that enables them to last so long. I mean, basically, what we're trying to do is you'd like to see the process of how a disk turns into planets, but of course that takes millions of years, and so you can't follow that. Through, at least I can't follow it through. So what you need to do is it's like taking a snapshot of a population. You've got old people and young people and babies and so on, and you try and infer how the evolution goes from putting the various pieces together. And then some people are, you know, large-ish or better nourished, or they have a different culture or whatever, and you try and see what different effects have on the population from that snapshot. And so to try and find other systems that are like this is a way of sort of like doing the experiment. Well, what happens if you have a much wider binary, or what happens if it's a different mass star in the middle? You know, we can't really do the experiment, but if we find enough different kinds of objects like this, then nature sort of has done the experiment in different places, and we just go out and look at it.
Well, Dr. Hartman, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Sure, no problem.
Lee Hartman is an astronomer with the Harvard-Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. He spoke to me from Boston, Massachusetts. Now, if you're interested in more space and astronomy news, please check out my website at universetoday.com. You can also give me any feedback, questions, or comments on the podcast or Universe Today. My email address is info@universetoday.com. Thanks for listening.